Hi, it's Beth here. Over 65, still talking, still trying to figure out what it's going to feel like to be 67, which is coming up pretty quick. So, this is episode 211, April 8th, and I know I'm going to sound like an ingrate when I talk about this, but Kit gave me $500 to go shopping, and I had to spend it on myself, which was incredible because I just hit yesterday my day that I could go out, 2 weeks after my second shot. And I really had, I mean, I haven't cut my hair in a year. I haven't been in a store in a year. So there I was. It was $500 cash. I love cash. There's no trace of what I've done. Nobody can, it's like, oh, getting away with murder. Best thing that ever happened. So I go out and I try to go to Last Call, which is Neiman Marcus's bargain basement store. It's gone. Really gone. Toys R Us is gone. Of course, it's been gone for a while, but they were right next door to each other. And that's what we did on Saturday mornings. There'd be birthday parties. They'd be in Toys R Us. I'd do a quick scan of, you know, Last Call and go in and we'd buy gifts. We did it. It's kind of like a ghost town. It's sad. I mean, like, I've got a lot of memories there. So get back in my car, go over to the Rack, which is Nordstrom's Last Call. And first I get a sandwich and I go into Whole Foods, which I haven't been in a year. And I'm dying to buy my own fruits and vegetables. And it was just so weird. Not too much, but I don't know how to read people with masks. So I get my sandwich, go outside, eat it. Everybody's looking down. There's like three tables. Nobody's looking around. And there was a lady with a baby. And I didn't even feel like she put her mask back on because she'd finished her meal. And I didn't even feel like I could say beautiful baby. And it was a beautiful baby. That's like my go-to first thing to say. So then I go on Nordstrom's. It's mobbed. Mobbed. Parking lot's mobbed. And I feel like I'm in a dystopian movie or a zombie movie. That I couldn't read anybody's facial expressions. I didn't know what to do. So, and I tried on clothes and I forgot to put my mask back on. Come back outside. I'm not wearing my mask. Oh my God, you'd think I was clubbing baby seals. I didn't remember. And it wasn't in my purse. I left it in the fitting room. Oh my God, a lady, you know, a worker came up and she said, "You're not wearing a mask." I was like, ah! And I looked through my purse. I've got two people watching me with masks on. Like, but I can't read their faces. I don't know if they feel sorry for me, if they're worried about me or they're mad at me. It was so disconcerting. I mean, so I looked it up online. Like, my whole day was like that. Went to Home Goods, same thing. Nobody's looking at anybody. I saw this Japanese couple and they were talking with their masks on and they might've really been from Japan because they were speaking Japanese. Maybe they figured out how to do it because they wear masks so often over there. So I did a study and I tried to figure it out because I was having fun with my clothes, but you know, when you go clothes shopping, you see women looking at dresses and they're wondering and you see that expression, then they hold it up and they like it. All these facial expressions go on when women are trying on clothes, and I love them. I used to be a sales girl. It's my favorite thing to do is watch people get excited when they put a beautiful dress in front of themselves and they can see themselves at the wedding or whatever it is. Lots of emotion. Half of it's about shopping and half of it's about people watching for me. So that was a mess. So I did some research and it is a big problem. We have to wear masks. It's a good thing to wear masks. I'm not saying we don't have to wear them. We might have to wear them for years on end. That's okay. I just want to figure out what's going on. And so happiness and sadness, the two biggies, when you're wearing a mask, the psychologists say they're frequently interpreted as a neutral face. That takes all the fun out of it. And the mouth is where people look to judge friendliness. And your mouth is covered up. That's how they do it. That's how they know if they can approach you or not. So that's why in emergency rooms, the doctors and the nurses put a smile on their mask, because there is no amount of time that can make up for that first false impression that you're not friendly. Well, I kind of felt that. It felt like everybody wasn't friendly. And then studies were done with cropped pictures to see how much people use their mind and their eyes to substantiate emotion. And it's like 90%. So they did this crop picture thing. And this is just one example. There was a red-faced man. His brows were furrowed. His mouth was open. And it looked like he was in a scream. And I saw the pictures and it looked like he was going to kill somebody. Every single way they cropped it, it looked like he was going to kill somebody. When you finally saw the whole picture, he was excited because somebody just hit a home run. But without all the clues that you get from the full face, you couldn't read it. So I went and I was looking up women who wear hijabs and how do they do it? How do they communicate? How do they get along? And what they do is they feel like easy conversations. They can absolutely handle it with their masks on. But in-depth conversations, they have found that they really do need to go somewhere private to take their masks off so they can follow it perfectly if it's a very serious situation. But they've come up with these ways. So this is what you do. This is from the experts. People have been wearing them their whole lives. You over-communicate. This should be easy for me. You ask a lot of questions when they've got the mask on. And so that helps with that. And you try to face them. Try to have no other sound around. Speak slowly, speak distinctly, and use more adjectives. Use more everything. Nouns, verbs, all elaborate. If you see somebody pass by, say, "That kite makes me happy." Don't say, "Look at that kite." Say, "That kite makes me happy. I love a sunny day. The rain is bothering me." Whatever, you can't assume they're reading anything on your face. And if they don't, if you don't even know if they're not following the conversation you're having. So ask them, "Is there any way I can make this easier for you to understand?" And maybe they will want you to speak slower. Maybe they're not hearing very well. Whatever it is, you gotta act like you're almost speaking a different language, because you really are. So that works for that. But, you know, this going out in the world and seeing strangers and smiling at them, this was going the wrong way because everybody's on their cell phone. So people weren't looking at each other even before this thing happened. And there is the social distancing isn't helping either, because nothing good, nothing of importance to your heart, except maybe if you're in an audience with the Dalai Lama, I guess he can reach you. But in normal situations, even strangers can't really touch you, your heart, unless they're 5 feet or closer to you. So it makes this whole thing really, really difficult. There's a thing called social space that's 5 to 12 feet. Business associates, speakers on stage, people you don't know very well, that's the distance they'll stay. And that's how the relationship will stay. When they get into your personal space, which is two to five feet, that's when sparks can happen. That's where your real close friends are. And that's where your family members are. But that's also how you start making an acquaintance a friend. I know it happens online. I know all these things happen, but the psychologists say it's not the same thing as in person. And intimacy is 1 to 2 feet. And that is like when you're with your lover or your baby or your dog or something, and you're touching them and you have to touch them. So really, with the 6 feet, there's no way to break the ice. So there's a lot of things that I wasn't prepared for when I got out there. And prolonged touch is a really big thing. Really, really important for children especially. And I remember my dad sitting and watching television with us, and he'd have his arm around me. And for some reason, I loved it. I would watch whatever he was watching if he had his arm around me. It's necessary when you're little. You ache for it. So that must have been why I was watching wrestling. I have no idea. So, you know the expression, I ache to comfort that person. I ached to give her a hug. I ached to be there for her. That's a real experience. So during the coronavirus, when people were sick and they couldn't help the person that was in pain or emotional pain, that person actually ached. It's actually a physical ache, and it causes tremendous stress that you can't be there for somebody that you love. So, I mean, this is really serious, but I was feeling it all. I thought it was going to be great. I thought it was going to be like the Munchkins when, you know, the Wicked Witch died and they all came out and they were all dancing. I thought that's how it was going to be when I went to the store. So didn't exactly work out like that. And I was really, really upset, but I'm understanding it now. It's just going to be different. It's just going to be muted. It's not going to be so great. So I've calmed down. But if you haven't been out there yet and you're not in a restaurant where everybody takes their masks off, that's fine, because you see people smiling and talking to each other and, you know, looking sad, happy, everything, you know, at all the other tables, and you can hear it. You're close. Nothing like that is happening in the stores. So that was it. There was a study done in Toronto, and I do feel this, and I'm not sure if it's the coronavirus and the masks, but I was feeling it before the pandemic, that people just aren't as friendly as they used to be. And they're saying that is because they're on their cell phones all the time. They never look up. And when they're on a bus or a plane, they don't have a conversation with a stranger. And that's the way you build compassion and empathy. Someone is surprising you, telling you their story. And it doesn't happen on Pinterest. It doesn't happen reading a story or watching a movie about a story. It has to be a real life person that can open up your heart and make you compassionate to something you never even thought about before. I mean, the same thing happens with traveling. When you travel to another country, you will always care about Egyptians or wherever you went, because you met them and you saw them with their children, and you know they're wonderful. You know they're people and beautiful people. Well, the same thing happens with compassion. So we're all not talking to each other, and there is no listening. So that is a problem too. There's a thing called nomophobia, and it's actually a new word. It's the immense fear of being away from your cell phone. I'm not kidding. This is like a new disease, and it's not good. So I do know that some kids, you know, like in their 20s and 30s, will go out to dinner with like three or four couples. They'll put all their cell phones in the middle of the table, and the first one to pick up their cell phone and check it pays for the entire meal. That's cute. That's great. A lot of people are taking their kids camping, getting away from any frequency. They go as far as they have to go where they can't get any equipment to work. That's where they camp. That's great too. The other thing is, you can just put it down. You can just tell people you put your, you know, that they can start knowing that you're not on your phone all the time. And you're not looking at it all the time. I love to get away from it, mostly because it's not really, there aren't any texts or phone calls for me. So it's kind of depressing, but that's my story. So anyway, that's what we got to do. We've got to, people get mad if you don't return a text in 3 minutes. That's got to change. So anyway, I went out there. I'm just telling you, like, cautionary tale, you know, don't get your hopes up too high. You know, it's not that moment in The Wizard of Oz. It's not ding dong, the witch is dead. It's a little complicated, like ding dong, the witch has got arthritis. It's not great, but it's much, much better. And I did enjoy my money, and I did buy some clothes, but they were, of course, a bigger size. So funny, my foot's gotten bigger. Like, it's like, I don't know, I'm turning into like the missing link. I have no idea. So with this long hair, I mean, I don't know what's going on, but I don't care. I got clothes, got a bunch of products for my hair, which is horrible, and some perfume and a scented candle that's going to last 100 hours. I mean, I made a killing. I had a ball. So that was fun. But the people watching and the interactions and feeling like part of humanity, it didn't click. So I just want you to be prepared for that. Of course, I've got a masked man joke for you. Okay. So got to end on a high note. Although getting out and spending money is still fun. Don't get me wrong. So thank you, kid. It was fun. So here's the joke. Okay. This masked man bursts into a bank, screams, "This is a robbery." He starts putting cash into his sack. While he's doing it, his mask dislodges and you can see his face. He's stunned. He looks at this witness who's standing there and he goes, "Did you see my face?" And the guy said, "Yeah." The gunman robber shot him dead. Goes to the next man. He says, "Did you see my face?" The guy goes, no, I didn't see your face, but my wife did." So that's one. I got one other and then I'll stop, I promise. Okay, so this town going through the coronavirus, and it had a curfew. But a really wonderful priest lived in this town. But you couldn't go on the street, not at all. So what he did was he got dressed up. He wore a hood. He wore a cloak. And he had a scythe like the Grim Reaper. And nobody stopped him on the street. Nobody. Nobody knew about him either. So this figure comes to this man's door. The man sees this figure and he goes, he almost dies. I mean, he's faint. He has to sit in a chair. He's like, "Oh no, please not now, not yet, please no, not the Grim Reaper." The figure takes off his hood, apologizes, and the man sees he's a priest. The man recovers. When the priest says, "There's a curfew, I just couldn't think of any other way to get out. I had to see you. I had to come to bless you, to protect you from the coronavirus." The man pulled himself together, stood up, stepped aside. The priest says, "You're letting me in?" The man said, "Yeah. I mean, how often do you find a blessing in disguise?" So, anyway, that's all I've got today. Stay sane. Get, tamp down your hopes and dreams for getting out and back in the world. It's, all the stuff is there, but the people aren't, the faces aren't. See if you can do some of the stuff I told you, but remember, you can't see anything. You know, like sadness and happiness look the same on the face. Like just prepare yourself for it, but get out there. The world's waiting for you, and I will be back. Thanks. Bye-bye.